Hello, podcasters, and welcome once again to this series of podcasts in association with Kilkenny Library Services and the Decade of Centenaries. My name is Owen Swinton Welsh, and in these bite-sized podcasts, I'll be examining the many different facets of the War of Independence era in County Kilkenny. In the last podcast, we looked at the capture of Huggenstown Barracks on the 8th of March 1920 by the Kilkenny IRA. Today I'll be picking up where we left off, examining the reaction and impact of that night's events. So, within 2 days of the Huggenstown attack, the coroner's inquest into the death of Constable Thomas Ryan was held in Cleary's Pub, Huggenstown, which is still a lovely pub and establishment today.
Ran, of course, by Bridges and Martin Cleary.
And it was held at 1 p.m. on Wednesday, the 10th of March 1920, just a few yards from where Constable Ryan had died. This ad hoc coroner's court, under the charge of Dr. Dennis Welsh of Craignamanna, who was also the coroner for South Kilkenny, gives us a very detailed record of what occurred from the perspective of the police inside the barracks that fateful night. As was customary, the jury of the coroner's court was made up of locals. There was a delay to proceedings as there was trouble getting the desired number of people to sit on the jury. I think actually I will name the jury here as it highlights how many of the surnames of descendants still exist in Huggenstown today. I suppose 100 years is not that long at all in the whole scheme of things. So the foreman of the coroner's court jury was Edward Tennyson of Bull of Glass. The rest of the jury were Matthew Keefe, Dennis Phelan, Richard Cudahy, Thomas Daniel, Edward Millay, Thomas Donovan, William Loughlin, John Millay, Patrick Power, John Elward, and Thomas Caltrop. All the jury had the unenviable task of viewing the body of Constable Ryan in the barracks just prior to the inquest beginning. The six policemen inside the barracks were named as Sergeant Nealon and Constables Dockery, Ty, Conway, O'Donoghue, and of course the ill-fated Thomas Ryan. Huggenstown previously had just 3 permanent police, but this had been increased with the closing of a barracks nearby. In addition, as mentioned in the previous podcast, Nealon's wife and 5 children, all under the ages of 10 years, were also in the barracks at the time of the attack. Hence, a total of 12 people were present inside the barracks that night. Sergeant Nealon described how he had been sitting up in bed with his wife at 11:30 p.m. just before the attack, as he was feeling unwell. Perhaps he had overindulged at Cleary's at the retirement party. Dockery and Ryan were the men on duty in the day room that night. However, when the fusillade of bombs started exploding outside the barracks, everyone that was asleep quickly woke up. The inquest heard that at the commencement of the attack, Constable Ryan proceeded with a box of bombs, or grenades as we might call them nowadays, to the sergeant's bedroom upstairs, from where, through an aperture in the gable wall, he could throw his missiles. The sergeant's wife had hid with the rest of the children under beds in the inside room. Constables Tighe and Conroy were firing through the day room front window. Donoghue was shooting from the back kitchen. After some time, Constable Ryan came downstairs to the day room with a terrible shattering of his right arm, as one of his comrades described it, and was heard to say, "I am done, they got me through the window." Now, there was only one window in the room where Constable Ryan had taken up his position, and one pane of the window had been smashed and one was intact, bar a few bullet holes. Constable Dockery bandaged up Ryan's arm as best he could. Lying on an improvised couch on the floor of the day room, Ryan realised his end was inevitable and appealed for a priest and a doctor. The men inside the barracks then decided to surrender. During the inquest, Constable Charles O'Donoghue emphasised that Ryan would not have caused his own injury as he had gone to a school of bombing instruction in Waterford and got a certificate. Dr. Marnell of Kilmaganny stated that he received a call to attend Ryan around 3 a.m. On arrival, he ligatured the bronchial artery and he stopped the bleeding and remained with him until he died at around 6 a.m. due to too much blood loss. Dr. Marnell stated that it is not likely at all to be a self-inflicted wound. He said that Constable Ryan's right hand was fully intact. It was his upper right arm that was shattered, which inferred that the grenade was not in his hand when it exploded. As we heard in the previous podcast, the IRA commander Tracy granted the request for a priest immediately upon surrender. Local curate Father Hine, who lived less than 100 yards away, was sent for and arrived within minutes and administered the last rites. After hearing the evidence, the jury retired to consider their verdict. Just before they did, in his summation, the coroner stated that This man died of shock and hemorrhage caused by a high explosive. Forget that this man was a policeman. You have ample proof that his house was attacked by men armed with deadly weapons. And like every man, he had the right to defend his house, end quote. The coroner also told the jury that, in regards to the accidental theory of death, he thought they might put that out of their heads, end quote. After about 15 minutes of deliberation, a verdict was returned. Whether through fear, loyalty to the cause, or loyalty to their neighbours, the head juror, Edward Tennyson of Boulia, announced the verdict, which would prevent a murder investigation commencing. Thomas Ryan died from shock and hemorrhage caused by a high explosive, and there is no evidence to show where the explosive came from. Thus, because no one was in the bedroom where Ryan had received his actual injuries, there was no witnesses to corroborate what had occurred there. The jury did, however, offer sincere sympathy to Constable Ryan's wife and his family. The ordeal for Constable Ryan's wife, Bridges, was prolonged, however, as the court case regarding her compensation for her husband's death dragged on for over a year. At the first hearing in June 1920, just 3 months after the attack, Bridget Ryan sought compensation of £8,000, which included her husband's predicted earnings and pension had he lived. His yearly wage was £240 at the time of his death, while also taking into account his 6 dependent children under the age of 10. Although having 5 children at the time of the attack, as stated previously, Bridget Ryan was 5 months pregnant when her husband died. The main issue regarding the compensation was which authority was liable in Kilkenny. This was complicated by the fact that Huggenstown Barracks itself was part of or borders 3 council jurisdictions, namely Thomastown District Council, Carrick-on-Shore District Council, and of course the overall Kilkenny County Council. Subsequently, solicitors representing the 3 council defended against the claim. Michael John Buggy, a Kilkenny City-based solicitor representing Thomastown Council, argued that it was the English government who were liable, as they had unreasonably placed this man in danger by allowing him, after an insufficient period of training, to use bombs. Mr. Bacon, a barrister for Kilkenny County Council, argued that Constable Ryan met his death in using one of his own bombs. This, of course, contradicted Dr. Marnell's autopsy. Finally, in April 1921, after a number of adjournments over the course of nearly a year, Bridget Ryan was awarded £4,500, which was to be levied off the County Kilkenny revenue at large. £4,500 would be roughly the equivalent of about €220,000 today, and of course, that's not an exact science with inflation and so on. The fact that Bridget Ryan was sub-postmistress at Barrack Street Post Office in Waterford City also counted against her, as she was considered in relatively good financial stead. Judge O'Brien, who presided at the case in Thomastown Courthouse, awarded £1,000 of the total amount specifically for the 2 youngest children, including Bridget Pauline Ryan, who was born in July 1920, 4 months after her father's death. This wasn't the only mention of Huggenstown Barracks in a court. A quirk of how the policing system was established in Ireland in the mid-1800s meant that the local big house landlord was responsible for the barracks. In Huggenstown's case, the barracks was owned by the Reverend Walter de Montmorency of Castlemorris House, which was just a few miles from Huggenstown. He received £230 of compensation from Kilkenny Council for the destruction of the barracks. The Catholic Bishop of Ossory, Dr. Brownrigg, was not happy, to say the least, with events in Huggenstown. The bishop had been vocally against this new wave of people seeking a republic, and he had publicly declared for the Irish Parliamentary Party candidate, that's John Redmond's party, in the 1918 election against the Sinn Féin candidate. He sent a letter to local Huggenstown parish priest, Father Rashford, which he instructed to be read at all masses the Sunday after the Huggenstown attack. He did not mince words in his letter, and it included the following. The occurrence which took place last Monday night in your parish at Huggenstown is a very sad and distressing one. In an assault on the police barracks at midnight by a large crowd of assailants armed with deadly weapons and explosives, an innocent and inoffensive policeman met with a sudden and violent death while discharging his duty. To deepen the horror of the occurrences, the poor deceased man leaves a wife and 6 children to mourn his loss. I can have no hesitation in saying that if I were one of the crowd of men that took part in the attacking of the barracks that night, I should feel unhappy in conscience over my share in the transaction that led to poor Ryan's death. After all, the gathering of men coming, it is said from the four winds of heaven, went there armed with deadly weapons to carry out an unjust and unlawful purpose, apparently without regard to the consequences, however dreadful, that might result from it. I am sorry for your parish, which has always, at least for nigh on 100 years, been peaceful and law-abiding. I am sorry for the fair fame of this diocese and county, which through all the turmoil of the past 6 years have never before been brought even remotely into contact with the shedding of human innocent blood. I offer up two prayers daily, one that God may enlighten and soften the minds and hearts of the misguided young men of the country. The other, that he may soon dispose matters peaceably, that we shall be freed from the tyrannical regime under which we are compelled to live at present. End quote. In the last line there, the tyrannical regime he was referring to was not the Crown Forces, but instead the rise of the Sinn Féin movement after the 1916 rising. Should be noted, I think, at this point that Bishop Brownrigg was not the only one to hold these views in the county, and I think it's good history and good practice to try to understand the full complex picture that existed in Ireland and Kilkenny back then, and certainly not to read history backwards. So, who were arrested after the Hogginstown attack? The majority of those detained and later interned were from Hogginstown itself and surrounding areas, but also the Brigade OC and Vice OC, Tom Tracy and Jim Lawler, were also arrested. The majority arrested had some involvement with the attack, highlighting the successful local information gathering by the RIC. It would, however, have been fairly straightforward to pick up the usual suspects, so to speak, even if there was no hard evidence against them. The prisoners themselves were first brought to Cork and then transported to Belfast by ship. Some were then transferred to Woodworm Scrubs prison in West London, which is still a men's prison in London today actually. Most of the prisoners subsequently went on hunger strike. Hunger striking was the main weapon used by captured IRA men during the spring of 1920. Hunger striking had initially been used by the suffragettes and was found to be a useful weapon against authorities and to garner public support. It became less frequent after the authorities decided to let Terence McSweeney and other Cork hunger strikers die later in 1920. The Hogginstown prisoners still in Belfast Crumlin Road prison were released after 6 days of hunger strike. Those in Woodworm Scrubs had a more harrowing ordeal, however, as they spent up to 21 days on hunger strike. They included IRA OC Tom Tracy and Michael Lockman, both from Kilkenny City, and Willie Farrell, Tom Barron, Jack Carl, Watt Barron, Nicholas Carl, Jim Welch, Ned Halloran, John Halloran, Danny Kelly, Bill Lynch and Michael Whelan, all from the Hogginstown area. All were unconditionally released by the end of May 1920 and received an enthusiastic welcome on their return after a month or more of incarceration, though some did require hospital treatment after their hunger strike. The majority of the released prisoners arrived home by train on Saturday the 29th of May and decamped at Ballyhale Station, where a fife and drum band led them to Hogginstown in a big parade. There was a bonfire at the crossroads in the village close to the ruins of Hogginstown. Hogginstown RIC barrack, which was burned down the month previously. Following the spate of RIC barracks attacks around the country, the Dublin Castle authorities closed down huge swathes of rural barracks around the country, including over 20 stations here in County Kilkenny, which was over 60% of the network of the county. Most of the empty barracks were burnt down symbolically on Easter Sunday night in April 1920 or Ascension Thursday in May 1920. This included the Hogginstown barracks, of course, which was burnt down on Easter Sunday night. Tom Tracy and Michael Lockman arrived home to Kilkenny from London together on Monday evening the 30th of May, following their recuperation in hospital from the effects of hunger strike. A group of dignitaries were there to meet them, and they processed from the main station in Kilkenny to the parade, and they were led by the St. John's and the St. Patrick's brass bands, with thousands of people on the street to welcome them home. At the parade, a public meeting was held and speeches were by the Mayor de Lucri and Father Matthew of the Capuchin Order. Jim Lawler, who had been incarcerated in Belfast, had received much the same reception when he arrived home 2 weeks previously. The Huggenstown Barracks attacks was a formative experience for many of these young men and women who took part in this. It is sometimes easy to forget that they were ordinary individuals thrown into an extraordinary situation. The main purpose of the barracks attacks around the country was to secure arms rather than to cause casualties to the RIC. It is likely that the IRA activities of the men who took part affected them for the rest of their lives in some way or other. The situation would change as 1920 progressed, with violence increasing and with ambushes becoming the main way to engage the enemy. Along with excellent planning, it was chiefly the element of surprise that was the principal contributing factor to the success of the Huggenstown attack by the Kilkenny Brigade. Joe McMahon's actions on the night were as invaluable as his explosives and cannot be underestimated. The bravery of the bombing party in attacking the roof under heavy fire was a strong factor in the success, as shotguns alone would not have dislodged the RIC. Unfortunately for the Kilkenny Brigade, McMahon had to leave the county and go on the run, firstly to Wexford. He was killed subsequently less than 6 months later while demonstrating explosives in Cavan, and that was in August 1920. The destruction of the barracks around the county prompted an air of peace in Kilkenny during the summer of 1920. The Kilkenny IRA would not have such an uncomplicated success as Huggenstown again. Within a few months of this attack, the auxiliaries and the RIC Special Reserve, commonly known as the Black and Tans, arrived in the county. Thank you for listening once again. Don't forget to join your local library to avail of all the amazing free resources. Until next time.